Welcome back to another episode of the Max Stern Podcast. Kyle sits here alongside James Finch, and today we are going to get into really the Gustav Forsling contract that he recently signed, but then we'll kind of talk a little bit broader about the situation. In short, we were really wrong on Forsling on the surface. But basically this episode, it's not to defend how wrong we were, but to, I think, put it more into context why we might not have been as wrong. So I guess we're kind of defending ourselves in a sense, but we'll get into it. We'll explain what we mean. So we appreciate you listening, subscribing, Max Stern Podcast, pretty much on all major podcast platforms. Content posted on X, formerly Twitter, at AFP Analytics. And that's where we have our contract projections that we're about to talk about with Forsling. That's where we break down as signings happen, stuff like that. So Gustav Forsling, I also should mention, this is my line of work. Athlete tax is my line of work. I've done appearance on Expected by Whom podcast in the past talking about athlete taxation. We've done an episode on it. I'm in the middle of doing a lot of hockey players' taxes. So I should mention here, I know what I'm talking about, but I also will speak as specific but as general as I can without giving away the goods of what we do and why we're good at what we do in our tax business, AFP Tax. So that's one of the, so there might be some things that, can you elaborate, and maybe not. So questions, I welcome them on X, tweet at AFP Analytics, or myself, try and answer them, but there might be also reasons that I can't talk about certain things too.
I think the main thing to remember is when Kyle talks in this episode, he's qualified with what he's talking about. So
yeah, I'm probably,
it's not to say you're flawless with the tax information, but it's somewhat saying, like, if you're going to listen to someone about this, it would be listen to Kyle.
I am probably one of the top five most knowledgeable people in the U.S. on this topic.
There you go.
Maybe top 10.
All right, so there's a general idea that certain teams may benefit from really just not having a state income tax. There are people who like to say that that's not true and it doesn't matter. It definitely can matter. I don't want to say it always matters because it doesn't always matter, but it's a factor. Along the lines, nice weather is a factor. How good a team is, the team's history, whether a player has a family and his kids are in school somewhere and he wants to be near there. Those aren't always factors, but they sometimes are. Tax advantage, same thing. So the reason Forsling is interesting is he signed or re-signed with the Florida Panthers, who play, obviously, in Florida, a no state income tax. Kyle mentioned we were a bit off on our projection. So I want to lay out our projection was a 7-year deal, about $7.34 million. Forsling ended up signing an 8-year extension, $5.75 million. So that's a bit different. It's about $1.6 million difference per year. And he actually did get an extra year. So looking at this from a tax perspective, and this is really where Kyle's expertise came into play, looking at what Forsling would net over the entire contract was about $27.68 million. Now, what we wanted to do was, let's look at if he were to sign a contract, our projected contract, with a middle-of-the-pack tax situation, middle-of-the-pack team from a tax perspective. So we selected Detroit. So this isn't any like rumor about Detroit and Forsling or anything. This is very random. It's just Detroit is a middle of the road tax situation. So if Forsling signs 7 years, $7.34 million, our projected contract, his total net would be $27,750,000. So $27.75 million. So again, that is our projected contract with a middle of the road team. And then his net was $27.68 million. So that's a difference of $70,000.
$70,000.
So almost nothing. So I guess I'll wrap this with, we can't for sure say that no state income tax was a huge factor here, but we can pretty comfortably say that Florida benefits from it. And I think this Forsling contract is a pretty decent example of such advantage.
So our projection, let's get broader picture here. What we try to capture is the market value.
Yep.
And the market value is based on contracts that have been signed. So it would be probably too much work to go update our entire contract database to a neutral tax situation. Although I do have a nice nifty little app that if you want to subscribe, afptax.com, you can figure out how to subscribe. Cheap plug for myself. It's pretty nifty. It allowed James to run the basically projection in matter of, or the situation in matter of minutes. So we're using contracts that have been signed, and those have not been adjusted for tax. So we're looking at gross contract value. So that's the number you see. When you talk about net contract values, that's basically what the player is putting in their bank account. There's, as we've already laid out, there's plenty of reasons a player signs. A lot of players just get comfortable in a situation and don't want to move. And Forsling happens to be in Florida on a good team and has been there for a long time. Again, you laid out everything. It makes sense. But when we're trying to capture the market value, we're not necessarily factoring in something like this. So again, I don't want to say that we were right, because our gross value, what matters for the team, really, that's what's on their books, that's their cap hit, we were way off.
Yep.
And I think a lot of other people who do a level of, like, Dom from The Athletic has like a value. It's a little bit different than we do. His is more like play value they're providing to the team. We're projecting what the contract will be. Might, if it's a nuanced difference, but there is a difference. But his value was higher than our contract value for Forsling. I think he was over nine. Like, Forsling provides over $9 million of value, which is not a surprise by any means. So
no.
I think everyone knew that Forsling took a, what you would say is a team-friendly deal, hometown discount. And originally, we were kind of, I think you were scoffing a little more at the idea of, oh, state tax, hold on, let's, there's no way that the tax situation makes this, close. The reality is the two big factors, no state income tax. So basically I'll get taxi real quickly, yep, to explain the process a little bit. Is, so the Florida Panthers play in the state of Florida, which imposes no state income tax. That does not mean the players pay no tax. If you live in the U.S., you live in Canada, you pay federal tax to the government. The U.S., any athlete, no matter whether they're on a Canadian team, U.S. team, every state they play in, the state has the right to impose tax on that player. So that means when the Florida Panthers come up to Buffalo, New York, play their division rival, if you will, in the Sabres, and then usually the team will do a Rangers, Islanders, Devils, Swing, they have to pay when they're in New York, when they're in New Jersey, they have to pay tax to those jurisdictions, to New York, New Jersey. Those are very high income tax states. So it's not that the Panther player does not pay state tax. He does, but it only occurs when the Panthers are on the road, which is 41 out of 82 games, or when it's based more on how many days spent on the road. So usually a lot of East Coast teams will do a California swing. So they'll owe tax for the days they're in California. If you look at the schedule, and I have to do this all the time, if you look at the schedule, most East Coast teams playing their California swing will spend exactly 5 days in California. Usually they'll play LA and Anaheim back-to-back, and then San Jose with a day in between, 5 days. In most situations, sometimes there'll be a sixth, kind of 1 day off between all those teams. But it's like clockwork. So every single East Coast team, basically every calendar year, spends 5 days in California. Almost guarantee. So they get hit with tax then. So when Florida goes on their California trip, they pay six out of however many total days they play over the course of the season. If they don't make the playoffs, it's usually around 200, a little bit over 200. So that percentage of their salary, they pay tax on in California. So they pay some tax, but it's just not a lot. Contrast that with, so we use Detroit because I'm trying to think of a state and or city combination. So I was trying to think of just a state situation, and most states, the highest are either 5% or really high in like the New York's, like closing in on 10%. I had said, look at Chicago was my first gut reaction. You're like, well, Chicago provides a slightly better. You were looking at the numbers in front of you. You said they were like ninth best situation, I think it was.
Yeah.
So then I went to Detroit. So basically the way the calculator works is it assumes the player is living in Michigan and living in the city of Detroit, which also imposes an income tax. So combined, we were using around a 7.5% rate. 6.75. Sorry, around a 6.75% rate. I apologize for anyone fact checking me. So that's basically the new quote unquote neutral rate we're using. That means that there are about 15 teams, including Canada, including a lot of the Canadian teams, that would have worse situations. So Forsling might have needed to sign for more to take home the same amount. And then there were about 14 teams that would have provided more beneficial situations. So Forsling could have taken less. Florida provides one of the best tax situations in the league. So them being able to take advantage of that and leverage the situation, I don't like the term hometown discount for them. I like they're using their inherent advantages to their advantage, basically. So, market value-wise, Forsling, we were off. But at the same point, he kind of got he will end up with almost the same money that we projected him to get. So, in a sense, we were correct. So, I think our broader question here is, at some point, should our projections be not tax? Should basically they be scaled to be tax neutral?
That's a great question. I would wonder about having both.
Potentially.
Because once we have the one, we could. That's something to think about, I think, for the future.
Because
it's an interesting thing. It's a little unique to look at it from this perspective.
The reason I ask that question is I think so. Okay, I've been in this for now 10 plus about 10 years. I've been involved in some way or another. I just got involved really young. I'm really not that old. I've been aware of this for a while. But I feel like it's becoming a lot more widely accepted over the past couple years. And if you're listening and you understand tax, You might know there was a U.S. government change in 2017 to the tax law that went into effect 2018 that basically limited itemized deductions. I'll just leave it at that. So that change in 2017 basically widened the gap between teams in tax-free states and teams in bad tax situations. It widened the gap. It always existed, but the gap grew. Right now, the law is set to change back. So all politics aside, the law is set to change back in 2025. There's what's called a sunset provision, meaning if Congress does not act and extend the law, it will go back to the way it was. Again, all U.S. politics aside, there's a chance that happens. There's a chance it doesn't happen. It would change, again, the dynamic of how professional teams operate. But I feel like, so I get tangent myself there. I feel like the idea of the tax situation, though, is a lot more talked about in the last few years than it ever has been.
I think part of that is even just the discussion around contracts in general and how teams are using or allocating their cap space. There's a lot more just overall discussion about it, and it pops up as a possible reason for a certain deal being the way it is. I think it's an important reason that without widespread conversation, without social media, it's not something that is as well known and easy to talk about. And that's not a shot at anyone not knowing tax stuff. You know way more than I do. I know a very basic level of tax. So I think in recent years, that's kind of been a big part of it. But we've also seen certain state income tax-free teams, what we would describe as taking advantage of that. So there's Florida, there's Vegas, Washington, Texas. I shouldn't say Washington, Seattle.
State of Washington. Yeah.
Texas.
Yeah.
Tennessee. So correct. Nashville Predators, yeah. Possibly.
I think we might be missing one. So we got Tampa Bay Lightning and Florida Panthers in Florida.
Yep.
Tampa's built a dynasty by having players supposedly taking less,
yes,
really leveraging their tax situation. We have the Dallas Stars, who have remained competitive for a long time. I mean, I'm sure the tax situation has helped, but there's other reasons that they've been very good. There is Vegas, who has absolutely leveraged their tax, yes, situation. And I can tell you firsthand, so won't do too much inside information, but I can tell you firsthand, Vegas is aware that they have a good tax situation.
Yes.
Vegas, the team knows that. The team quantifies that. The team sells that to players. I can tell you that. I can't tell you which player I know it about, but I can tell you it. I've seen stuff from Vegas, and they try and quantify it. Seattle Kraken, newer to the league. So Seattle's probably an interesting case study in that they might not have a bunch of the other factors that we talked about, like the nice, I mean, I love Seattle. It's one of my favorite cities, but the weather is not always nice there. Their team does not have sustained success. So it's not the end all be all. And look, it's taken the Florida Panthers a little while to get here as well. And then, Nashville's been developed into a really tremendous hockey market. And I think there's other reasons that Nashville's developed, because I think a lot of players want to live there and play there as well.
Yeah, and some of these teams, you can point to some deals, and this isn't inside knowledge at all, but it's speculation. You look at like a Ryan O'Reilly deal in Nashville, where he's in the $4 million and probably could have gotten a little bit higher, we would have thought. Very recently, Seattle.
Jordan Eberle.
Yes. He just signed. That was one that was a little lower than we thought. And even if we were expecting to possibly miss, it was a little lower. So that's, not saying it definitely impacted that, but it's very possible it did.
So I as much as I think it's important, I'll also counter myself and say, okay, so Arizona imposes a state income tax, but out of every single state that has a team, so you take those states without tax out, Arizona's the next best tax situation, and it's pretty substantial at this point. Arizona's tax rate 2.5%, which is very, very low. There's no like city or county taxes that you get subject to. That's not bad at all. Like, and then there's also some tax credits that they provide that make that situation even more ideal if you potentially end up in Canada, or I mean, if you're an NHL player up in Canada playing. Arizona's not bad tax wise, but you don't see players flocking there because they don't have the other things in place.
Yeah.
So it's great. It's great that you have that advantage, but you also have to take advantage of that advantage.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the perfect way to put it. And I think what you also just described, it's important to highlight that there's the obvious teams and states that don't have any income tax. But that doesn't mean you can just group together all of the teams and states that do have an income tax, because there's differences. It's not like they're all using the same tax rate. So ones with better, so in Arizona in comparison to a
LA Kings and one of the worst.
Yeah, there's, even though there's state income tax for all the players on those teams, it's a very different situation still.
Yeah, no player is going to, like, choose Arizona over the Kings to save 10% in tax. It's just not going to happen. If all else is equal, there's, like, the factor of playing in Arizona is just, it's not going to happen because of the situation in the NHL right now.
Yeah, and I think really looking at all of the factors of all things equal is kind of how, I mean, not every player is going to do this, but it's the same if all things were equal and then you're looking at the weather. Well, maybe a player likes the weather better in Tampa Bay than in Seattle. So it isn't the reason. I wouldn't describe it as the reason, but it certainly can be a reason.
Exactly. I think one of the, it's the fact that it is, if you are in the U.S. or Canada, you are probably working on getting your taxes prepared. So me being someone who does that, you know, I'm not staying up quite as much on the news as everything. So I'm not, James has been running the social media a little bit more, but I did see one reply to one of the tweets about some, to when we laid out this Forsling, someone had said, well, this is why they put no movement clauses in their contracts so they can stay in these favorable tax situations. That's valid, but also if you've been living somewhere long enough and you get basically temporarily reassigned, that does not mean you're automatically being basically thrown completely into that unfavorable tax situation. So like there's tax strategies and planning and stuff like that that can, again, if you play games in California, you pay tax for each game you play in California. So if you're a member of the LA Kings, you're paying tax for every game in California, regardless if you live in California or don't live in California. So that's not great. But there are strategies and methods, especially if you've been living somewhere long enough, where you can keep basically residence in Florida. It's very doable. So, yes, no movement clauses help. But at the same point, getting a long-term deal to basically stay in Florida, as Forsling's doing, even if he were to be traded at the towards the end of his contract, that's not going to like dramatically kill his tax situation.
Yeah, so and the thing there with Forsling specifically, I think he does have a no move for the first 6 years, turns into, I believe, a 16-team no trade the last two. But part of that response was also kind of referencing, well, if a player doesn't have a trade clause or a move, no move clause, then they could just get moved halfway through the deal and it's going to change things. So why look at the tax situation? And like you said, if they're moved later on in the contract, it's not going to change things dramatically. But I would also argue that from the standpoint of if you're deciding between a couple teams, let's say, I guess we can use the Forsling example we laid out. Let's say Florida and Detroit. If all else is equal, you like both things, and you're just looking at the tax situation, if you're signing a 4-year deal or a 5-year deal, you're not necessarily doing so thinking, okay, yeah, this team's going to trade me in 2 years. That's not how you make life decisions. You're not going to predict, okay, they're moving me in 3 seasons. That's just not how you can make decisions. So looking at it, it's, okay, I'm signing a 4-year contract. That's what I'm going to plan for. So when we talk about how a player might actually decide this and value the differences in the tax situations, I don't think not having a no-move clause or a trade clause is really going to factor into this tax discussion.
So I have a role where I work with regularly NHL players. So they're just people. Like, to me, a lot of players are just people. They're the same as like James sitting across from me. Like, they just make more money and have slightly more complex tax situations. But they're just a person who ultimately goes home at the end of the day to their family.
Yep.
And if you are taking a job, I'm just talking in general here. I don't want to attack this person on Twitter because it was a good point.
It is.
But at the same point, if an ordinary person's taking a job, they're not taking a job expecting to be fired in 2 years.
It's also very possible they're not expecting to leave. So, I mean, it's kind of talking about the team versus player relationship, or for a regular person, the business versus employee. It's pretty much the same.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening, think about how many like people in your life that you know who have been with the same company at the same role for. I know it's a little more common in today's day and age to move jobs, but at the same point, I'm sure anyone listening to this knows people who have literally spent their entire career with the same company. Like, my parents worked pretty much at the same jobs for my entire life. And then they both retired. Like, they weren't expecting to go anyplace else. They were never looking to go anyplace else. A player has that same mentality. Yes, their career is shorter. Yes, they make more money. Yes, they play they're high profile. But at the same point, it's no different than anyone listening to this podcast in your own situation. So, like, you're not making a decision expecting something to necessarily happen. You're making a commitment. You expect both sides to honor that commitment. And I think a lot of times in sports, the players get painted as the bad person because they ask to be traded, they ask to be moved, stuff like that. I mean, but no one has a problem when the team says, oh, we'll just kick you out the door and at whatever time. Like, trade deadline recently passed. One of the interviews that I think stuck out was Kyle Oposo on ESPN talking about how he had to tell his, like, basically talk to his kids that, yeah, he's going to be going to Florida and he knows that he's not going to see them very often, if at all, for the rest of the season. Elias Lindholm had made that reference leading up to the deadline with Vancouver, saying it's been a tough adjustment because he's been living out of a hotel. I mean, that's the reality. That's not an easy situation. So you sign these contracts kind of expecting to be on that contract to be honored, just like anyone would with a contract.
Yeah. And I think another important thing to point out, and I would not to pile on to the response we got on Twitter, but the majority of contracts, they play them out with who they're signed with. So right now there was the trade deadline. Everything's hectic. People are wondering who's going to get traded. There's all these deals going down. In general, most players, most contracts aren't traded.
And how many that were traded were players with more than a few months left on said contract?
Exactly. So it's, and I think the thing that keeps popping into my head, and I think it's the overarching theme here, because there's always people saying it really matters or it absolutely does not matter. I think the best way to put it is it can matter. It doesn't have to matter. It doesn't always matter, but it certainly can, just like all the other factors we've talked about.
So I think we're kind of to the end of this episode. We've exhausted. I mean, we weren't exactly sure where we were going to go. We know we wanted to hit on Forsling. We know we wanted to talk about it. Really, the takeaway that we kind of ultimately are too long, didn't read point to the Twitter thread was the two things that Matt, that for Forsling is the eighth year that Florida, that the collective bargaining agreement allows Florida to offer that no other team would have been able to offer. And the fact that Florida is based in a state that has no income tax. Those are the two main, those allowed Forsling to basically take a quote unquote hometown discount. That really wasn't much of a discount when you start to talk about neutral kind of situations. So that's kind of the too long didn't read or too long didn't listen to the episode summation.
Yeah, I think that's about perfect.
So with that, we appreciate you listening. Again, I want to reiterate, we're not trying to explain away why we're wrong, but I think provide context why our projection was off, but not off. I don't like the idea of trying to defend ourselves every time we're wrong, because we got to take some L's sometimes. But this is a situation where context is important. It is a deal beneficial to the team. It's going to allow the Panthers to probably keep one or both of Sam Reinhart and Brandon Montour, as well as Forsling, so not have as much turnover. I still think they lose someone.
I do think it's also possible that one or both of those players could come in a little bit less than what we would expect their market value to be.
Exactly. So if a Montour came in a $7 million, that would be very much in line with our market value projection. If a Reinhart came in at an $8.5 million, again,
even nine,
that would be very much in line with our market value projection when you're talking in neutral situations. So we don't know what's going to happen. Chance someone tests free agency, because Florida is not the only state without income taxes. There's other teams that provide really good advantages. It's just Florida's got a good team with great weather, new practice facility, good ownership. There's not much to dislike about the Panthers.
Everything's going well for them right now.
I won't make a Florida joke. I'll leave it at that. So there's a lot going well for the Panthers, and players wanting to sign there is not surprising. So if they take a little less, let's not label it a hometown discount. Let's label it as they're smart. They know what's going on in with the tax situation. So with that, appreciate you listening. Subscribing Max Stern Podcast, available on pretty much all major podcast platforms, at AFP Analytics on Twitter. And with that, we'll talk to you next time.